the difference or the benefits of trying to develop a state of mind which is still, i.e., free of randomly appearing objects, and the mind, and the other approach, which is just to allow whatever arises into the mind to arise into the mind and know it, just being aware of it. It seems there, it appears there's a contradiction, yet they're both given as a means to develop both shamatha and insight, it seems. And when I kind of open the mind to allowing, just open the mind to the meditation, and the meditation does seem to spontaneously take different objects as they arise, it doesn't seem to detract from the depth of the meditation. In fact, it seems like deliberately trying to anchor the mind to one object stops the depth of the meditation. It seems to be like a false, like going back somewhere and anchoring it somewhere. Like, it seems like, why on earth are you doing that?
Okay, well, there's a number of things that about what you said. First of all, you said, I know I had trying to, I don't remember exactly how you said it, I think you said trying to stop random thoughts from arriving in your mind. And how does one go about stopping that?
Well, through changing one's mental habit. By anchoring it to an object, to a single object.
If we look at what happens, we'll see that there's, at least initially, before you train the mind at all, there are all kinds of thoughts arising. And even after you've trained your mind, you haven't meditated for 24 hours and you sit down. And there's just all kinds of things arising one after another. But what you know from the training is that all these different thoughts, if you don't attend to them, if you don't allow the mind to keep chasing after this one and that one, or grabbing onto this one, or actually allowing this thought to take hold of the mind, and you spend 30 seconds or a minute or whatever it is processing that. If you don't do that, then after a little while, the thoughts arise and they just evaporate almost as fast as they come up, and they don't come as often. And this is the result of not attending to thoughts and not giving them that kind of mental energy that both sustains the individual thought and fuels the process of more thoughts arising. And there's two ways you can do that. One of which I think is quite a bit easier for most people. The more difficult way to do that is to just say, I'm not going to attend to any of these thoughts. And that's more difficult to do. Or you can say, well, I'm going to choose one particular thing to attend to, your meditation object, and just preferentially focus my attention on that until these other thoughts gradually cease to be so strongly present and so frequently present. And they may not disappear entirely. And that is the value of using a single object, is entirely as a means to attaining that kind of stability in the mind. And there's two components to this. We find when you try to do this that the mind doesn't want to stay on one thing. It's, you know, and it takes some training to get to the point where it will just stay on one thing. So that's one part of it. The other thing is, if we just notice this constant parade of different thoughts and ideas and memories and emotions and everything that keep coming up, we realize that there's an awful lot of mental activity going on that's out of sight. And all those different processes their agenda has nothing to do with your conscious intentional agenda of sitting down and calming the mind. And as a matter of fact, each of those processes regards any degree of calm that occurs as an opportunity to insert its priorities into conscious awareness, right? So the other thing, so one part of it is actually achieving that training of the mind where it stops chasing, trying to chase that, or wanting to chase after, and it really is, it's a kind of desire to go after these things. And the other is that we bring about I think the perfect description of this unification of mind, ekagata, gone to oneness, the unification of mind. So gradually, all of these different mental processes aren't going in so many different directions. More and more of them kind of calm down, quiet down, and sort of get on board with what's happening. Okay, we're sitting down, we're quieting down now, and all we're going to notice and think about and feel about and so forth is just what's happening now in the present moment, not what happened yesterday and what might happen tomorrow. And so that unification of mind takes place. So the combination of the training that stabilizes attention and the unification of mind. Good evening, welcome to both of you. The combination of those two then makes it possible to put your attention on one thing and you'll find that it stays there and all the background noise begins to quiet down and there's a lot less of it. But it also, once that's occurred, you no longer have so much need for a single object. Okay? There is a point in the training, and actually it's when that concentration becomes effortless. Once, if you place your mind on something, on your meditation object, on the sensations of the breath, and it stays there, and there's no longer this tendency for it to want to go somewhere that you always have to keep correcting for, or the tendency for it to slip into dullness. When it just stays there, and the mind stays bright, at that point you don't need one object anymore, at all. At that point, you can practice a kind of open awareness. Now, initially, what's going to happen, you say, okay, I'm just going to be open to whatever comes up. Your mind's already quieted down. There's not very many things coming up. But a thought will come, and then you'll become aware of a sense. Gradually, there'll be more and more. And what you're going to notice, what's special about that you couldn't possibly have noticed in the beginning? Well, what's special about it is it happens slowly, sort of one at a time, so you can notice the mind's reaction to it. In the beginning, you couldn't, because it was just a deluge of stuff coming up. And you had no hope of noticing how your mind is responding to any part of it. But now, in this stabilized, quiet, with the mind unified, and now allowing things to come, you'll notice how the mind tends to contract around one thing or another. And you realize, okay, to have a completely open awareness, I need to overcome that. I need to develop the Teflon mind, that whatever kind of thing, things don't stick to it. They arise and they pass right through. You know, they're like water off a duck's back. They come and they go and they leave no impression and they don't disturb the stillness and serenity of the mind. Now, at that point, you could stay with one object. And it's not the end of the process, because where you go from there would be into that unique experience of absorption in the jhanas. What you do is just allow yourself to totally go into that single object. The other alternative, which I just mentioned, is to practice this open, spacious awareness of just letting anything come and go, but you liberate every thought, you liberate every sensation, you liberate every emotion at the very instant it enters awareness. So that there is in however long it lasts, however many seconds or whatever it's present before, between its first arising and its passing away, the mind doesn't grab to it. The mind doesn't begin to congeal onto it. Other things you can do, and now we're talking about all the different kinds of practices. You see, when you can do what I just described, you can now do Mahamudra. You can examine the mind with completely still, and you can examine the mind as it moves in the sense that things appear in it and pass away, and things appear and pass away. And between the arising and passing away of this thing and the next is the period of stillness, and you can examine the nature of the mind. Very similar to that is the practice where you stay with an object, but instead of absorbing into the object, you stand back from it. And you have the experience of watching the mind as the mind watches the breath, for example. And what you're really doing is you're meditating on the mind, the nature of the mind. And this is what you're examining, this is what you're investigating. The breath and the fact that that part of the mind which used to seem paramount is still monitoring the sensations of the breath. There's been a sort of a foreground background shift, because before that here was the sensations of the breath, and yes, I see them, and I'm aware of my mind, yes, but here's the, I'm really focused on it. And now it's kind of flipped around. So when I'm really aware of my mind, yes, my mind is observing the sensations of the breath. So that's a very powerful way of practicing. And then other ways of using the stability of mind, keeping in mind that things now are arising and passing away much more slowly rather than the deluge, the torrent that you started with. So now what you can do is you can focus totally on each individual thing. This is your object that you're just totally investigating as it arises and as it passes away. And then something else comes up, and so you move the mind, so the mind is hitting on each thing, and it hits on it with total awareness, and it sees its arising, and it sees its passing away. And as you do this more and more, you see the arising and passing away of the object, and then you see the arising and passing away of the knowing of the object, and then you see the arising and passing away of the object followed by the knowing of the object followed by the feeling tone that it induces in the mind. And then you keep watching and you say, there's the object, and then there's the knowing of it, and then there's the feeling of it, and then there's the desire or aversion or whatever kind of response to the mind produces it. So this is another way of investigating. All of these different practices that you might hear about and read about that might sound like they're different, if you look at them carefully, what you're going to see that they all have in common is that you've achieved a very powerful stability of attention, a very powerful awareness, and that the overall activity of the mind has really slowed down to become quite calm and stable, comparatively. So then all of these practices have these features in common, and then exploit them in different ways to bring about insight and understanding. So, back to the original question, it seems that by focusing on a single object as compared to by you mentioned stopping all random thoughts in the mind. Was that combined with focusing on a single object?
Well, no, I tend to use focusing on a single object to get to a certain state of mind, and then it feels natural to let that intensity of focus on one object, the breath, just relax it, and then it feels like the meditation goes into a deeper state at that time.
Yes.
And then to return to the breath, which I think from what you're describing, maybe it's just because I get a bit freaked out when there's a pause, when there's nothing happening, so then I'm so used to having an object, I bring one back.
Yes.
And as soon as I bring one back, I feel like I drag myself out of that deeper state of meditation in order to hold on to the sensation of the breath again. Mm-hmm. So it feels like going that anchor, it seems to pull, mm-hmm. pulling me out of
yes.
deeper state of meditation.
Right. And in the case that you described, yes, what it is that conscious awareness, which the focus of which is attention, is what once again is being caused to move. You've gone to all this trouble to train yourself so that conscious awareness stops moving and stays stable. But at the same time, you've habituated yourself to always having an anchor. And so when there's not an anchor, then there's the tendency for attention to start moving to go and find something to focus on again. Yeah. And so what you're experiencing is the loss of stillness, the stillness that you had created. And now once again, the mind is moving. The mind doesn't have to move, though. If the mind remains completely still, an object will appear on its own, sooner or later. And if you enjoy a prolonged period when it doesn't, you want to investigate that. There's two possibilities. One is that your mind, that there is an object, and that your mind has generated a blank slate to hold in front of the illumination of consciousness to create the illusion of objectlessness. And if you look, you can become aware when that's happened. The other possibility is this is the mind completely at rest. And so you can begin to examine the nature of the mind at rest while you're waiting for the next object to appear on its own. So you don't need to go looking for an object. You can continue your investigation by watching the tendency of the mind to look for an object and watching the result of that, which you've already seen. It's like all of a sudden the mind that was still is not as still anymore because it just moved. So now there's the ripples that it created by moving. But the other thing that you can do is to you become aware of the urge to find an object, and you just allow that urge to be there without acting on it. But really, what I like about, or what I should put this out, I was going to say, what I really liked about your question is that it brings into focus what we're actually doing with the training of the mind. But maybe more accurately, I should say, what I really enjoy bringing out as a result of your question is that point, that all of these different ways of describing the states of our mind and the different kinds of practices that we can do, that they can all be understood they can all be understood as not being different, but as really being different ways of applying the same aspects of mental training. You mentioned open awareness, and I know I keep lately especially I seem to keep encountering people who learn something about open awareness, and until the mind is trained enough to be still, the way that we were just talking about, open awareness is really not very much more than just sitting there and letting the mind do what it usually does, think about this for a while, wander over that for a while, worry about this, plan that, and just being really relaxed and happy with it. And that's not the idea of open awareness. So, because in each of these cases, the difference is that the mind is still grasping to and clinging to, congealing around, contracting around each one of these things that comes up. And then it lets go and find something else and says, oh, isn't this fun? And, oh, yes, there's a nice thought. And, oh, there's an interesting sensation in my foot. And it's kind of fun. But it won't stay fun for very long. After a while, it just gets boring. It's like, yeah, but what is the point of all of this? Of course, you ask that too, about focusing the attention on the sensations of the breath. What's the point of this? And the point in all of these cases is to stabilize the attention so that it doesn't move constantly. To unify the mind so that mind's not flooded with all these different thoughts and memories and feelings and everything else. And to do so without the mind doing, without the mind engaging in what its usual alternative is to busyness, which is to dive into dullness and eventually go to sleep. Yes, ma'am.
You spoke of one of the techniques would be that the mind, or part of the mind, observes the other mind working with whatever. Is that witness consciousness?
Yes, that's the witness
consciousness. Isn't that, you talked another evening about we should not separate, because then there is witness consciousness and the object, and it becomes separated, or did I misunderstand that?
I think you might have understood a little bit. You can have this experience of the witness, and then whatever arises and passes away is very sacred. The experience is, I fall back on the kinds of things that people have used for years. The objects of consciousness are like the reflections that arise and pass away in a mirror. They have no effect on the mirror. They don't change the nature of the mirror at all. And the witnessing consciousness is not altered, it's not affected by the objects that arise and pass away. And when you watch the mind, as the mind watches the sensations of the breath, or if you watch the mind as the mind produces its thoughts and other contents, then this is the experience that you have of the imperturbability of the observing consciousness and its independence from the objects that arise and pass away. And there's different ways that the mind can react to that experience. One is to seize upon the witnessing consciousness as, my true self. This is who I really am. Which is, in one sense, it's true, but it's totally false in the sense that there is no separate self, right? So, and there's a little bit of a paradox and contradiction there that I won't go into. But the mind will seize to that, and it will identify that unchanging consciousness of the witness consciousness, and say, that's my true self, my higher self. And self always includes that idea, this separateness. So this is one of the things that can happen. The other thing that can happen is that one says, I'm experiencing the emptiness of these objects. You know, because here is, they arise and they pass away, their ephemerality, their mind-dependent nature, you know, their non-substantiality is so obvious, I'm experiencing emptiness. And you really are. But you are, at the same time, you're not experiencing the emptiness of the self, because hidden in there is this thing, I am seeing this emptiness here, right? So there's all, these are the kinds of mistakes that can be made in the interpretation of it. I'm not sure what exactly I mentioned the other night that you might have said, the thought I said that you shouldn't separate them.
Yeah, I don't remember the context, but I was hearing that be careful with witness consciousness because the eye is involved then, watching the mind or the object, and then you would separate again and become the self instead of losing the self.
Right. It is, you know, as witness consciousness, it is experienced dualistically. Even though you're perceiving these objects as being empty of any independent self-nature, but you're moving very close to a genuine perception because you're beginning to see these objects as appearances arising and passing away in the mind. And so you're moving in the right direction. And I refer to this particular state as a dualistic mystical experience, because it's a genuine mystical experience. But it's one that is still inherently dualistic. And so I give it that label, the DME, the dualistic mystical experience, just to reinforce the recognition that this is not the end of the process. You haven't had the experience of discovering emptiness. You haven't discovered the true nature of self. You are having a dualistic experience.
Okay.
And then and then there's the unified mystical experience. That's the other name that I like to use, the UME. And that's where your mind ceases to identify itself as separate and has this experience of unification with everything. And that's a very profound experience as well. And what's special about it is also cutting to one aspect of the core of reality, which is the emptiness of the self. So we're having an experience of the emptiness of self. But usually the unified mystical experience is wonderful. Oh, I'm a part of everything. You know, it's my consciousness is in the walls and the floor and the rocks and the trees, and there's just this, everything is consciousness and there is no separation. And what that is doing too is it's subtly reifying all of this. It says, oh, this world here, it's not being seen as empty. It's only seeing the self as empty. So it's when you get both of these together at once, so that the self and everything else is empty, then you have actually had an experience of the true nature of reality. And that produces a profound effect. So welcome to those of you that came in since I began talking, and I always try to make this period before we sit an opportunity for newcomers to raise questions, or people who have not been meditating for very long and maybe just got instruction a week or two ago and have had a week or so in, to raise their questions. And of course, what always happens is that I get caught up in answering these questions of more advanced meditators. So right now, please, does anyone have any of the kind of questions that we really want to help you with, that we really want to address for you? So, been meditating for a little while and you're having some problems or challenges or something's happening that you're not sure what to do with? No?
Okay, you got me. I was actually going to bring this up last week. So this isn't really new, but I'm revisiting it again, and I'm not finding myself working with it very constructively, and I'm not even sure how long it's been going on, it may be months now, but I'm finding when I sit, I've got a lot going on circumstantially in my life, and I've kind of brought up this question before. But it's so enticing right now to work on this stuff. And so there's two parts to this. One is that I'm finding even more than usual lately that my practice, when I'm actually doing the practice, is really dull. Like, at this point, it's just become kind of stagnant, which I don't think is unusual. So the draw to go into doing the work, my work in my head, you know, before I actually get up and do my work, is really powerful, and it's working on these levels that I can't quite seem to access and kind of bring on board to do the practice. So I'm feeling like there's probably something I should be doing more as a preparation for my practice every morning to get my intention in line. And the other part of it is, and I was thinking about this just while I was sitting here, is that part of the appeal is also that I find when I'm doing my practice properly, that there's so much dullness that when I come out, I'm really dull. Mm-hmm. And so I'm not charged up to do the work that needs to get done, and there's a lot of it. versus when I'm sitting and doing my work in my head, it's very focused. It's almost like the analytic meditation you've mentioned before, and I come out and I'm just like really gung-ho and I'm really productive. So it's kind of two factors working against me. So I'm wondering if you could speak to that and kind of any advice as far as how to get kind of get perspective again about what my ultimate goal is.
Yes.
Something like that.
That's exactly what you need to do, is to keep in mind what your ultimate goal is.
Yeah.
And the thing is that it's true. If you're going to have to sit for 45 minutes an hour, because some part of yourself has made that rule that you have to, and if you are on the one hand very interested in your work and on the other hand prone to dullness in your meditation, then it's going to be very appealing to spend that mandatory 45 minutes or an hour doing what interests you, namely thinking about your work, which you find fascinating, rather than sinking into dullness. But it sounds to me like you're not really dealing with your dullness in the proper way.
Yeah, I might not be.
How are you dealing it? When you sit down, you start to feel dullness.
So what I was doing, it seemed to be working. When I felt like there was more mindfulness there generally, when I go into the dullness, is that I found that there was ways, and it was kind of the whole practice was doing this, but ways of almost just through intention and through sharpening my kind of focus on the object, that I could bring myself out of it. And I've tried the other methods you suggested that are more kind of invasive, like clenching my body or deep breaths and things like that, more the clenching the body one I use a lot, and I've never found any of them actually work for any extended period of time. But maybe I've used those more for gross, really like really strong dullness, and maybe I haven't used them as much for the subtler dullness. So maybe I need to bring those back in more. But in the past, it would work to some extent to just have the attention, but pretty soon I would lose sight of how dull that was, and then I would be strong dullness, and then I wouldn't have any kind of choice about how things were going.
Okay. So let me just review the best way to practice. When you realize that dullness is present, then what you want to do is to rouse yourself completely from that dullness. Okay? So whatever you do, it doesn't matter what you do. Any of the things that I suggested, or you can think of your own things, but this is the standard to use, that if you feel fully alert and awake for several minutes, say 3 to 5 minutes, then you did enough. If you don't have that, if in less time than that, if in 30 seconds or a minute, you find yourself sinking into dullness again, then you didn't rouse yourself sufficiently. And so this time, rouse yourself more strongly.
Okay,
that's number one. Make sure from the very first... what you want to try for is, I shouldn't say make sure, because of course it's a trial and error thing. So, but what you want to try for is from the very first recognition of dullness to do something that rouses you sufficiently that you're out of it at least for 3 to 5 minutes. Okay? And then it may come back. And then you just keep repeating. The other thing that is very important is, as soon as you have roused yourself from the dullness, then what you want to do, your main object then for the next 5 minutes, or at least until dullness does become apparent again, is to be alert for a dullness that reappears and to identify it, hopefully more quickly than you did last time. And so, you know, it's, you know what's happening here. The feedback circuits between your cortex and your brainstem that keep your cortex alert, they're shifting to a new pattern, right? And there's a loss of stimulation. So what you want to do, you rouse yourself, and what's going to happen is as you sit there in that, you know, 2, 3, 4 minutes in that period of time, with your mind calm and not without your eyes open and without stimuli coming in, then what's happening is this feedback circuit is starting to go the wrong way again, and it's starting to put your mind to sleep. So you want to notice that as soon as possible. And the more quickly you notice it, and the more quickly you do something that is going to cause those circuits to pump more adrenergic neurotransmitters into your cortex, the quicker you're going to wake up. And the longer you're going to stay awake, and the easier it is going to be. So that's why you want to catch it as quickly as possible. And that's also why you want to stimulate your mind enough so that you've completely interrupted the pattern. The pattern may reassert itself, but you want to make sure that you've stimulated your brain enough that you've brought yourself all the way out of it. And the way to tell that you've done it, because the timeline that this pattern operates on is one of several minutes. And so if you can stay out of it for 3 to 5 minutes, you know you've completely aroused your brain. And so that's what you shoot for. Mm-hmm. And then the next thing you shoot for is to try to, when it begins to reassert itself, catch it earlier and reverse it earlier. And once again, it's a training process. You repeat this as often as you need to. In a given sit, you will often reach a point where you're awake now, and you know that you're not going to slip into dullness again, and you don't for the rest of the set. Each time you have dullness and you practice this way, you're going to be more likely to reach that point. You're going to be more likely to reach that point sooner. Till eventually, you're going to train your brain and train your mind not to go into dullness. Mm-hmm. And so that's what you should be doing. You should, when you sit down, you shouldn't be saying, oh no, dullness, maybe I'll think about work. It's, oh good, dullness, I've been needing to work on this, I need to get over this once and for all.
Yeah.
And so this is my opportunity. You know, I've got, well, 30 minutes left in this sit to work on it. Great, here we go.
In my defense, I haven't been intentionally choosing to go into thinking about work, but there's a level like where it's more appealing. But I'm not, I haven't fallen into that, thank God.
Yeah.
I'm actually choosing to think during the sit.
You start to go into dullness and you lose
exactly. You
lose your edge. You lose that introspective awareness that says, what am I doing thinking about work?
Right.
And so the next thing you know, you're thinking about work. And that will wake you up again, but now you've forgotten what you're supposed to be doing. So you're into genuine mind wandering.
Yeah. Well, and I've noticed, it's definitely come out of two, that in general for my day, I've lost a lot of the edge of mindfulness, or introspective awareness, just in general, just recently. I'm not getting overboard and catastrophic about it. I know it's temporary, but so that's definitely coming. That's part of the reason why my practice has been so easy for tens of minutes to be just kind of barely with the breath and mostly with work. So but I definitely am.
Right.
Yeah. I think you're right. And that is kind of where I know I need to put my attention. So.
Well, sometimes it can happen that you deliberately decide to do this, oh, this is more nice. But nicer, more nice. Anyway, but as you say, dullness takes away that edge, and then your mind will gravitate towards what it finds more interesting.
Yeah.